Hi, I'm Helen Johnson. I'm the new CFO here at Appen. Just want to thank you all for joining us today for our Technology and Investor Day. Let's see, first and foremost, if you're with Baron Joy, let's see, where'd they go? Thank you so much. You guys have been amazing. Thanks for hosting us here today. We've got a big agenda. You're going to meet the full management team almost. A couple are in the States and couldn't make it. But Armughan and the team will lay out our new strategy and, as a team. And I think you're going to see something new and different here. The market is just outstanding for generative AI, and Appen has a long heritage of participating in the space under deep learning and has a real opportunity here in the new market as well. So give us an hour and a half. I bet we'll win hearts and minds, and I'll look forward to working with all of you as we move forward. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Nice to meet you all. Some of you I've met on the phone or Teams. Siraj, where's Siraj? I just saw him. He just came in from Melbourne. Is he here? Oh, there he is. I saw you. Yeah, he just came in. Thank you for coming in from Melbourne. Everybody here from Sydney or anyone from out of town here? No, everybody from Sydney. So thank you. I appreciate it. And then we have a lot of people. We have a lot of folks. Thanks for making the effort. And then we have a lot of folks on video who have come in through the webcast. So good morning to you or good evening and whatever time zone that you're in. So we thought we'll walk through a full Appen strategy for you that requires strategy, but that requires technical. And I just happen to be somebody standing in front of you. I said this to the AGM this morning that, you know, the person standing at the podium doesn't get to the podium by themselves without a great leadership team. And we are really delighted to have our leadership team here this time around. Even Rock came out of China, which is great, so we appreciate that. And then we have you know, our chief revenue officer and others that I'll introduce you to. So we thought what we'll do is tell you a little bit of a story about what Appen has been and what Appen is going forward, because I really think that Appen's been severely misunderstood, especially in the Australian market, and it was not heard of in the North American market. So we're really on a mission on making sure that this is a dawn of a new era in the world. It's nothing to do with Appen. It's everything to do with artificial intelligence, right? There is now this saying that there is a new programming language for generative AI called human. It's actually not COBOL anymore. It's not Python anymore. It's none of that. It's basically humans are required. When you look at ChatGPT, ChatGPT was not trained by some programming language. It was actually neural networks that got developed, and then it took almost 6 years of prompt engineering work with humans all around the world to tweak it, to fine-tune it, and then make sure it's assured so that it doesn't want to go out and steal nuclear codes like Sydney did for Microsoft when Microsoft first launched it, and it was a huge hoopla on their part. And then they realized very quickly that the fine-tuning is how important, but then also the assurance and the monitoring of when it gets done. And again, it requires humans. So we want to make sure that everyone understands that this is the first time. I've been in the industry for 27 years. My last role was at KPMG globally. Before that, I worked for Michael Dell. We built out $89 billion worth of assets and took them private to public. And then before that, I did HP, where we sold the company, 3Com with Bain Capital, where we turned around. In my 27-year history, I've never seen what's happening at this time. And I've never said this. I have very public keynotes and figures. You can go and check. I've never said that before. Why am I saying this to you now? This feels like the advent of fire and when electricity was invented. And because since I've been here for 4 months, I feel like I've been here 4 years. That's how fast things are changing. They're changing every week. If Ryan and I or Sati and others are not reading our Twitter fast enough, forget the Australian or the AFR or the New York Times or, you know, the Washington Post. They catch up later now. It's real-time changes and who's coming out with what platforms and how fast they need to provide solutions like that. Why is that happening? It's happening because for the last 28 years, Appen has been selling to hyperscalers. Hyperscalers are the Googles and the Metas, Metas of the world. Google, Meta, Microsoft, Amazon, Baidu, Tencent in China, they were very matured in their artificial intelligence. They had data scientists. They had armies of people. Enterprises, if you take, you know, CBA here or Westpac here or your insurance companies or Telstra as telecom, they have not been as matured. So it wasn't until generative AI came about, they're like, we can now deploy this, and we can now deploy this to save billions of dollars of cost in our contact centers. We can save billions of dollars of cost in our knowledge management systems, in our marketing areas and others. And it just made it very easy for them to deploy. And now what we have seen just in the last 4 months, so many of the enterprises, and I'll actually show you, so you don't, you have to get to know me. I'm the type of person who doesn't say anything that I cannot do. The last 4 months, I told you certain things, and I think a bunch of you I've been meeting. I told you that we're going to come in, run operational rigor. At that time, we told you $10 million. We're going to take that out by 2024. I showed up 4 months later. We told you we're taking out $46 million operational rigor. But not only $46 million, we already executed 60-plus percent of that $46 million. So, again, that's a say-do ratio. Don't worry, we did not cut into the bone or the muscle of the organization. There was a lot of fat in the organization. Why? Because we built out a lot of our selling organizations or what we call our federal government organizations or enterprise organizations way ahead of time, and the revenue never came. And some of these areas had very high revenue to OPEX ratios. I've never operated a business where it has 60% revenue to OPEX ratio in some of my businesses. Well, that's all gone. I have this four-letter acronym. Don't worry, it's a different letter acronym. It's KTLO, keep the lights on in certain areas, right? So get that done so that we can actually bring in the people who have seen this movie before and very quickly start to move there. When I showed up here, I talked to a bunch of you, and I said, hey, we're going to go toward generative AI. A lot of people said, oh, my God, that sounds cute. And then now everyone wants to talk to me why NVIDIA, $700 billion market cap company, signed with us, and only us. When you, by the way, Google NVIDIA, go on their website, ask for training data, fine-tuning company and others, happen. Doesn't provide any of our other competitors there, right? Why does a company that has a $700 billion market cap decided to go with Appen? That's just two examples. I can give you probably 20 what we are doing from a say-do ratio perspective. So today, we are going to show you even more than what we have told you on during the equity raise we just did and some of the investors that we talked to at that time. And we think that we need to show you a lot more than that. So let me start. Let's say, first of all, by the way, how many of you use ChatGPT or prompts? Raise your hand, please, if you do. Yeah, so almost 80% of the room now, right? If I would have asked you this question in February, that room, this room would have been just two people. So if I was to ask, and I'm not going to call it ChatGPT, I'm actually going to call it a large language model. That's what they are. And you happen to only know of just one. You may know of one more or two more. There's about eight now. ChatGPT just happens to be one of them. Right? We're actually building this kind of a service for our clients that they can actually ask that question about their data. So I can actually ask the question, write a very short formal note thanking all of you as investors. That's what it would write. And I can ask it, hey, you know, they're actually valued investors, so make it more friendly. And it would then say, dear esteemed investors. And then it would say, thrilled that you joined us, right? Think about what happened for it to do that. Appen powered the what happened. It's called reinforcement learning with human feedback. We've been helping Google. Someone just asked me that question. Hey, have you been doing this with any of the LLM providers? We've been doing this with Google for 2 years. You think Bard just happened? Bard just didn't happen because ChatGPT happened. It's been happening for many, many years, right? So we even had the people who founded Google Bard that came out of DeepMind, which are out of London, called Google Brain. Those people left Google Brain and have created their own ChatGPT version called LLM, Large Language Model. It's called Reka. Dani Yakutama and others and all those PhDs and researchers who actually founded a lot of those foundation models are now partnering with Appen. Think about why they're partnering with Appen. I'm not smart at them at all. Josh, you and I are definitely not as smart as those guys. Combined, we're not as smart, right? They have, between them, multiple PhDs with 100-page published documents on neural networks. And they chose Appen. So that is what that does. But it's not just some, you know, prompt and you can say a thank you note to investors. Sati and Mike and Sujata in our product group now use these types of solutions to actually write code. Almost 50% of our code is now written using this method. I just met with most of your banks and your telecom providers here, C-suite executives. I asked them that question. They're like, what? It can write code? We thought it just writes my email responses back. A lot of that, they don't know yet. It's nothing about that they don't know. It's just moving so fast that they don't know. And then they ask me the second question. Hey, Armughan, is it okay? Can we deploy it? What's the risk profile? Who's going to assure it? Who's going to validate the model? We're like, well, that's who we're working with Deloitte and PwC on. We've been doing that for them. We're now actually doing that with other customers who are helping us do that work. So that's, if that's interesting, you are now thinking about Sarbanes-Oxley, for example, and you can ask, how many pages, Sati? You just 66 pages. And you can take 66 pages and you can ask it, hey, give me a SOX report and tell me what Sarbanes-Oxley needs to look like, and it'll give you, you know, something along those lines. Okay, so if you know all of that, is great. But then how many of you have taken a picture, really nice picture with your family, and someone's eye was closed, right? You don't have to worry about that anymore. Large language models can actually do a lot of this work. This just got announced, by the way, last week. So when I'm telling you 4 months ago this didn't exist, this will be on everyone's camera phone by Apple or Google probably in the next few months. There'll be a new software update, I don't know, 16-point gazillion that we are all working for, right? So think about these types of features. That's all front-end features. Think about enterprises are going to need features like that. So that's where Appen's history comes from. For 28 years, Appen has been in the human and language game. 28 years. Julie Wommeler, so yesterday Julie and Chris had the session with us because they were committed and they were not here for the session. So my team and I met with our founders, our largest shareholders as well, and they were extremely grateful that we showed them the entire strategy. And Julie, who did this at the University of Sydney and Macquarie, and then she founded the company, it was basically a company that was started here 28 years ago, focused on a problem. Nuance. How many of you have heard of a company called Nuance? It was acquired for billions of dollars by Microsoft. It's now part of Microsoft's Nuance platform. It's the speech-to-text recognition system. They called Julie and said, hey, we have this company. I didn't know it was called TAB. I called it TAB, and somebody in my Australian team corrected me. It's like some gaming company you guys have here. And they called us and said, hey, it doesn't understand. We hired Nuance, and Nuance cannot program it with Australian accent, English accent. So they hired Julie for that, and it was a speech-to-text. Then in the 2000s, I don't know if you remember that far back, but let's just say 2000s, there was a bad guy in the mountains of Afghanistan that they were trying to catch. The three-letter acronym intelligence agencies called Julie and said, hey, we hear that you can transcribe very complex Arabic and Pashto language into a solution that we have developed called voice assistance. This is way before Alexa, way before Siri, right? And they hired us to do a lot of that work. The same people who were at DARPA, who then ended up catching that guy with a bunch of, you know, listening devices that were everywhere, understanding, just like you have listening devices in your home right now or on your phones, that's how they catch bad people. We were powering that, right? Again, language, human, annotation work, super important. That same person who invented that ended up leaving, went to Amazon, hired us, and came out with Amazon Alexa AI. He's now advising, by the way, us on the next journey that we're on. He's one of the biggest banks' chief data scientists. Not able to tell you his name. Okay. So then in 2010, this is all that I've learned, by the way, about Appen. And I've met with everybody, all of you. Everyone, most of you don't know this story. And I think we need to tell this story better. We have a new chief marketing officer starting in the next 2 weeks. He's leaving Google after 12 years. To join us. 12 years. Why is somebody leaving Google to join us, right? Can't announce him because I haven't announced him yet. But then you think about Google, another myth that I would like to please debunk, and I need all your help to please debunk this, and we can provide you all the data you want on it. Say it with me. We're not a labeling company anymore. We are a relevance company. We've been doing Google's relevance check, so when you type in, I would like to see a black suit with lapels or whatever. Actually shows you a black suit. Doesn't show you an ethnic person wearing a black suit. So Google's been hiring us to do a lot of relevance work for them. We have a lot of other social media companies who've been hiring us, as you can see, for misinformation for elections or, you know, just ads that they would like to sell. And it's called human relevance work. That same human relevance work that we've been doing is now required in generative AI. I know, by the way, the human relevance work that we're doing in this space does not slow down. It's still ongoing. So we now have a TAM, a total addressable market. Total addressable market that is now $308 billion. Only 20 to 30% of it is generative AI. The rest of it is still this deep learning AI that we are still growing, and we need to grow, and we need to now move from. And by the way, another thing, I know Appen's stock's gone down, and I know what's happened to Appen, and we've missed the last 2 years of our earnings. But if you actually take out our number one customer, we have been CAGR growth positive 10%. It's our number one customer that's our problem, which we're now fixing. We used to deal with a peon manager level person there. We now deal with the vice president and senior vice presidents of that organization. Why? Because we have people like Andrews here and people like Sati, or someone said to Sati, oh, do you know that person? I just did some background check on you. It's like, oh, yeah, I have that person. That did not exist at Appen before. That's what we're trying to fix, so that all of us who walk in anywhere, we have connections and we're able to, you know, have that conversation. And they're now saying, oh, we didn't know that you guys did this or did this or did that, and now we can do it. It's called proactive selling. I'm sure you've heard of this, called proactive selling. For the last 28 years, we have been in reactive selling mode. We wait for the phone to ring. We pick it up. We're like, how many of these would you like? Sure. That's it. We never ask the second, third, fourth, fifth question. So that's what we're trying to change, and we're moving in that direction. In 2020s, we then moved from that to helping some of the largest retailers in their drive-through. My daughter works at one of them. She's 18. She's been working for the last 2 years there. If you've ever been through a drive-through, somebody is ordering something, someone's screaming, or music is very loud, now they're using Appen technology to understand what the person's saying. So my 17-year-old daughter can actually say, oh, that's what they're saying. So I can actually say, oh, you want burgers and no pickles, right? So that's us powering that. Not only that, but a lot of our work that we're doing in China, along with in Germany and others, automotive manufacturers who are catching up with Tesla, and we're doing a lot of their work around self-driving autonomous vehicle. And then after our Quadrant acquisition that we have done, a lot of point of interest data. How many of you, I don't know if you've been to Barrenjoey's new offices, looks very nice, by the way. Thank you, Barrenjoey, for hosting us here. And if you Google it and say Barrenjoey office, you know, it shows you a picture of where that office is. If it was a barber or, let's say, a restaurant, you need to see that picture, or else you'll say, oh, this is not correct, right? We do that work. In Apple Maps case, when you actually go to Apple Maps and look for that, it will show you. What does it say, Mike? GeoLancer? Powered by GeoLancer. GeoLancer is an Appen product that came out of his organization. Now think about it. He's going to show you the kind of work we're doing, where we have people going around just trying to understand how to sell insurance around, you know, buildings like these. And if they had GeoLancer type data, what they could do. Mike's going to go into a lot more detail there. So hopefully now you understand what Appen has been, and it's been language, 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 human, human, human. Our crowd, our Appen Connect, and our ADAP platforms have been the ones that have been there. And again, I'm not just trying to be facetious here, by the way. I'm just trying to get all of you to just basic understanding of where Appen is. Let's level set, and let's work together on figuring out what this company is, because so many people are calling many of the analysts, sell-side analysts here, and saying, hey, how does NVIDIA and Appen work together? Please explain this to me. We're happy to explain it to you. Call us, call Sati, call Sajata. They're much smarter than me, and then we will explain that to you. Okay, so not only do we have all these amazing customers, and we've been telling you about these customers. Last time I was here, I told you that I'm actually going to bring customers here. It costs a lot of money. We just raised money, so we didn't fly people here, but we got some customers on video, so we'll roll the video, please.
Hi, everyone. I'm Hemant Kulla, Global Head of NVIDIA AI Software at NVIDIA. Since 2020, NVIDIA has worked very closely with Appen as one of our key partners to develop speech and language models using Appen's datasets. Appen's experience for data across AI lifecycle will be a critical step forward for helping enterprises accelerate building, deploying, and adoption customizable AI, bringing AI to each and every industry. I'm Danny Yogatama, co-founder and CEO of Reka. We have been very impressed with Appen's deep expertise in AI training data and deep knowledge of model evaluation, monitoring, and benchmarking. We are building API integrations with Appen platform to enable real-time model feedback and tuning. We are incredibly excited to work with Appen to safely and responsibly bring generative AI to businesses.
At Salesforce, trust is our number one value. We take great pride in delivering AI-driven solutions that meet the needs of all of our customers and users, regardless of their linguistic, dialectal, or cultural backgrounds. Our customer success is our success, and helping them build experiences with equality in mind is why we partner with Appen for our AI businesses. Appen is a reliable and experienced partner in the space, offering high-quality data sets, custom data collections, and access to global data sources. Their deep language expertise and long history of supporting the development of trusted AI data models is precisely why they're my go-to partner for all things conversational AI and data. With Appen, we can confidently deliver solutions that meet our customers' and users' interactional, social, and behavioral needs. We trust Appen.
All right, so you just heard from the largest NVIDIA company that has $700 billion market cap. I think they just released their results yesterday. Probably market cap went up by another, but $50 billion. And their chipsets are used in 83% of all the artificial intelligence that's being built in the world. AWS uses it, GCP uses it, Google Cloud, Azure uses it. All of the on-premise architectures that are made by Dell or HP or IBM all use their platform, right? They've decided to choose us. And Hemant is the GM who actually works directly from Jensen, directly for Jensen. Jensen's the guy you guys see in the leather jacket, right, all the time. They are really forward-thinking, and they started working with us in 2020. So this is not, like a lot of people ask, oh, generative AI, did you just catch on the bandwagon? This is the other thing I would love for you guys to do myth bust for me. There's a lot of new startups are all coming up. They're all saying, you know, one of my competitors run by a 26-year-old guy. Nothing wrong with that, but they are just saying, I could do this, I could do this, I could do that. They have no creds in this space. We have creds in this space. That's why many of our clients and customers are calling us, okay? Second thing, I told you Danny Yokotama, who is Reka, he was the founder behind a lot of the large language models at DeepMind for Google Brain, which was behind Bard. And his leadership team are the people who built Meta's Llama interface and many of the others. And they have left those groups to go out and start theirs. And just like in one day or 2 days, they raised $40 million. And then they were able to get many of the enterprise customers who are saying, well, I don't need a very large language model. I just need a very small one. They're like, we can build one for you. They said, well, who's going to fine-tune it? Do you have fine-tuning people? No, Appen. Once it's fine-tuned and deployed, who's actually going to then make sure that the monitoring of it is working? Appen, right? That's part of us. So we believe that, you know, this part, let me go back, this part of our deep learning and generative AI continues to be very important to Appen. ADAP, which is our current platform that was purchased through Figure 8 acquisition, now becomes even more relevant to us. And then our Appen Crowd platform that we use to have a million plus people who work on our platform, now people are asking us for segmented crowd people. So think of lawyers, think of teachers, think of English professors, think of people who are not wanting to come into a beautiful grand jury office, who want to still work from home, and what type of gig workers are required. And we're now doing a lot of that work, right? And then, as I mentioned again, 300, according to IDC, the largest industry analysts in our space, other than Gartner and Forrester, have said this market is a $308 billion market, and they believe that 20 to 30% of that is generative AI. The rest of it continues to be in deep learning AI. So when people, please, when you ask me, oh, is your deep learning going away? Is this going up? They're not going away. We have huge headrooms to move up into where, you know, out of the big hyperscalers. We only have two big hyperscalers that give us majority of our revenue. We have a lot of space that we can get into. Okay. So Human alignment with AI, that will continue to be important. Last week, the G7 prime ministers and presidents met in Hiroshima and signed an accord as the top leaders around many of the countries who said that human alignment is going to be critical, and they want to ensure in order to regulate AI, human alignment is going to be needed. And who does human alignment? So again, there are lots of companies who are saying, yeah, we can do human alignment right after the Hiroshima AI Accord came out. Again, these are startups getting $10 million, $5 million every day as funding, and they're saying all of that. We just need you guys to understand this value proposition so that many of you as investors, but also sell-side analysts can understand what that is for us. So how do we create trustworthy AI that aligns with human values? It has to be a lot more than that. So today, I'm super excited to actually show you a lot more details around it. So we did a bunch of work over the last 4 months, went out and met with a lot of our customers, and we found out that the number one point from our customers is that 77% of the Fortune 500 enterprises are now making AI their top priority. Before, we would call them, and they would say, go and talk to the 10th person removed from the CEO called the data scientist. And the data scientist will say, well, I have no budget. Can you just do some relevance work for me or annotation work for me? Now, that data scientist has been asked to come to the C-suite and present to the board chair. That's the difference we've seen in the last 4 months. And 77% of those enterprises have made that their top priority. But they are all worried that, okay, sure, if I launch a large language model for, you know, Big Bear and Joey's, all the data that you have on us as Appen, for example, and our competitors or other analysts or whatever, if any of that information goes into ChatGPT's LLM, guess what? It's a public LLM. It's a very large LLM. So their data breach happens, data leak happens, regulators come and shut down this beautiful office. That is the number one concern for most regulatory protected organizations. So they're calling Deloitte, they're calling PwC and saying, our technology team has developed a great large language model. We need somebody to come in and provide assurance on it, provide risk protection on it. And 90% of the CEOs are worried about that. I can't tell you in the 4 months I've started here, I've gone and seen probably 20 plus CEOs and board chair of Fortune 50 companies, not 500, 50. And that's what they're asking for. They're asking for how are we going to, because our technology teams are saying they're ready to go. Is this true? Even Microsoft's telling them, you have an on-premise enterprise, that's all good. But then they don't realize that if you use OpenAI's large language model, it's a public model. It's not on-premise. But if you use Azure, but you use a different LLM like Reka's or Cohere's and others, that's protected. So that's why we have now sort of moved away from Appen for data AI lifecycle selling only to hyperscalers to now moving and saying Appen now provides fine-tuning services for your deep learning or your generative AI solution, and then as well as also providing it for assurance of that service. Let me explain how that works. I'm a tech guy, so we always have a layer cake or a stack in every presentation we're going to have going forward. So let me, if you just humor me for a second on what this layer cake is, it sort of will help you understand how a customer builds that. So all of you, I've met you before, I've met many of you before, you all have a lot of data in your organization. And you've got 2 billion under management, some have 4 billion, some have 200 million under management, Citigroup or JP Morgan and others, or Jefferies have a lot bigger portfolios. All your CEOs are asking this question, and they're all asking, how are we going to build a very quick large language model that will ask us not to buy any new software? Welcome, please have a seat. There's lots of spaces here. And so number one, we sign partnerships with all four of these vendors. So you want to do it on-premise, use NVIDIA. You want to use it off-premise, use Google Cloud, use Azure and others. But that's just your compute layer. What you need after that is your LLM that you're going to use. These are just four of probably now eight. By next month, or by the time I'm done this presentation, there'll be another two, because large language models are now becoming commoditized and they're being open sourced. So the customers are like, which one do I use for my contact center? Which one do I use for my knowledge management service? Which one do I use for, you know, critical regulatory protected data? So that's what we provide. On top of that, the customer then says, well, okay, so I can pick that. Who's going to take all my data? So I keep using Bear and Joey. I hope you don't mind, Josh. You guys are a great organization. I'm sure your data is good. Matthew Brown is going to be okay with me after that. So this is all fun and games. I'm just trying to tell you that all the data that exists is in different, you have a cloud, you have a server, you have different architectures and different customers. All that data has to then be fed into your models. So there has to be someone who is going to ingest that for you, right? And then after that is where Appen comes in. So a customer has to build the first layer, the second layer, the third layer, and then they're like, okay, now that we have done that work, who's actually going to provide me the reinforcement learning or instructive prompts on it? So Sujata and Satya are going to go into a lot more detail on what instructive prompts are and how they actually work. I'm just giving you a very high level. And then they ask you assurance. How are you going to provide continuous monitoring? And I'll just give you simple things. Remember I gave you the example of searching for a black suit. It shows you minorities wearing black suits, which is toxic. LLMs ask for prompts. So someone has to write a prompt. When my credit card is not working, you have to ask a prompt. Somebody has to write the prompt. English becomes cool again, by the way. It's not, the computer scientist is not cool anymore. It's actually English professors. And you can't find enough of them to do this work now. And then once you train it, you have to make sure that you're monitoring it, which is critical for us. And then on top of that, you put your search. Now pause for a second. Think about all your organizations. Think about all the software you have today. All the software. Think about if you did not need to pay licenses for any of that software going forward. That any question you had for your HR system, IT system, any question you had for your business client, like Josh may say, how much business have we done with Appen? How many times have they missed their earnings? How many times are they making their earnings, hopefully, now? You can ask that question without calling an associate. I'm not saying the associates are going to go away. I'm saying they better start using AI because the other associate is going to start using an AI very quickly, right? My son is at one of the MBBs right now, management consultant, and he's using that every day to do all of his work because his partners are cracking the whip on him, and that's what he's doing, right? So in order to do that work, our view is that there are four key applications that we're seeing many of our clients ask us to help them develop. One is contact centers. Knowledge management is the other one. Your discovery, which is think of e-discovery to KYC, know your client type discovery work, to even e-commerce solutions. That's where many of our customers that you just heard from are doing work with us. So I now have this new saying, software ate the world, now AI is going to eat software. That's trillions of dollars of what's going to change. And that's not just me saying it, it's Andreessen Horowitz saying it, it's Sequoia Capital saying it, it's all the early checks that went into Facebook, Uber, Airbnb, and all the people we all think that they're really cool. Those are the people who are now writing checks into companies that can now do that type of work. Okay, and it's a $308 billion market TAM now. 20 to 30% of it is in generative AI. We've worked with IDC, and IDC has actually told us that they feel that Appen is a leader in this space. We're going to play a video for you from IDC, who's actually going to tell you that, and that's going to come a bit later. Okay, so let me bring my portion to a close because all I did was just talking. We're going to show you how we're doing all of this work. My key message to you, deep learning, super relevant still. Generative AI becoming much, much more relevant. $308 billion business, $308 billion market TAM for us, and that TAM is almost 30 to, it's moving really fast, 20-30% generative AI. We have a lot of headroom in deep learning. ADAP and Appen Crowd continues to be super relevant. Why? Because human is the new generative AI language rather than other languages. And then our ADAP platform remains. With that, I'm going to ask Sujata, my chief product officer, to come up. And Sujata and I started working together, about 4 months ago?
Yeah.
4 months ago. And I think...
It feels like 4 years.
I know, it feels like 4 years. Yeah. So, but she's like, I was just sitting there for the last 1 year. I'm joking. So Sujata, and then Sati is going to come, our new chief technology officer. She's very humble, does not talk about her background much because she just wants to get shit done and move to, oh, can I say that? Sorry, delete this. Sujata, 20 years Microsoft, worked on the Bing platforms, built out the Azure machine learning platform. She ran MLOps at Microsoft. Very, very smart brain, but a great, great human. So I'm going to turn it over to Sujata, please.
Thank you, Armughan. Hello, everyone. So I'm super excited to be here to show you all the cool products that we have been building. As Armughan mentioned, Appen plays a key role in powering both generative AI and deep learning applications for our customers. I'm going to first share a little bit about what we do for our deep learning customers. So specifically in the relevance area, because that's where majority of our revenue comes from today. Search has become an integral part of our life, whether you're looking for a movie that's playing near you, or tickets to the Sydney Opera, or the rugby scores. The secret sauce to search is providing relevant results. And the way search engines do it is by training it with human feedback. And that's exactly what we do at Appen. We power search relevance for search engines such as Bing, Google, Pinterest with human feedback that's provided by our diverse crowd. And let me show you some stats. We have a diverse global crowd of more than 1 million contributors in more than 170 countries, speaking more than 235 languages. And we pay between 50,000 to 100,000 contributors each month. And we have over 1,000 projects, 1,000 relevance projects running in parallel at any given time. Like right now, as we are speaking, we have 1,000 relevance projects that are going on. So that's the scale that we operate at. So the second type of search we power is the enterprise search. I'm sure most of you have had this problem where you look for some information on your intranet and it's just so painful to find. Or even for your customers who come to your website and it's just so hard to find that information. And we power enterprise search for our customers with the same type of fine-tuning product. And I'm going to share a little bit more about the fine-tuning product just in a little bit. The third type of search we power is retail search. We work with e-commerce giants like Amazon to make sure that when you're looking for black shoes, you actually get black shoes and not black hats. And we do that again with our fine-tuning project, and I'm going to show you a demo of that just in a little bit. So let me give you a little bit more examples of what we do for deep learning. When a customer is ready to deploy a model to production, they need to make sure that the relevance of that model is better than what's already in production. And that's done with human feedback. You don't want to deploy a regression to production. Or when you are building a model and you just want to see how the model is performing, that's again, you do the relevance check with human feedback, and we power that. Many of you have probably seen, have used translate functionality on the search engines where you give it some text in some language and you ask the search engines to translate it into a different language. And we power those translate functionality with the language data sets that have been collected by our global crowd. And we do this using our segmented crowd, our current technologies of ADAP and Appen Connect, and our language expertise. And again, I just want to reiterate what Armughan said. AI, it's all about language now. And language is our superpower. And this is a quote from Microsoft of how we were able to power the translator functionality at Microsoft because of the depth of the language feedback that we've been able to provide and all the language data sets. Now let me share a little bit about generative AI. I believe generative AI is going to fundamentally change how we interact with the world. And as Armughan shared, some of the change is already happening. I am super excited about the products we are building for generative AI that are going to power these inventions that are going to happen in this space. And the beauty of it is that we are going to leverage our current platforms and expertise to build those products. It's very important because I see a lot of startups actually coming up in the generative AI space, but they have a very steep learning curve. At Appen, we have gone past that learning curve because we've been using the same platforms for powering the search relevance for our deep learning customers. The way I say it is, we have made the mistakes and we have learned from it. And we have battle scars to show for that. Others have to go past that learning curve. Okay? So let me share with you a little bit about the generative AI experience. Today, let's say when you go to Target and look for black shoes, you get a pretty basic experience. But with generative AI, a retail customer will be able to power a lot more richer conversational experience. I'm looking for black shoes. Now the model will ask deeper questions to understand the meaning of the question instead of just showing a static list. Over here, it's asking what type of shoes, what event is it for, and gives me appropriate results. And this is again powered with our fine-tuning products. This makes the customer happy because they're able to fulfill the task of buying the shoe, and the retailer happy because they've been able to fill the cart. Let me share a little bit more detail about the products themselves. Every enterprise company that's going to use large language models will need to teach the model its taxonomy, its lingo. And that's what the prompt response pairs do. Over here for the retail case, the retailer has a specific definition of what a wedding shoe is, or what a formal shoe is, or what a cooler shoe is. It's that brand voice, it's that brand integrity that needs to be taught to the model. And that's what the prompt response pairs do. And we do that with our segmented crowd, again, using our same technology of ADAP and App and Connect and our language expertise. Let me show you a demo in this video of a customer who is going to use our fine-tuning products to evaluate the search results. In this particular project, this is an ADAP project where they have specified how the evaluations need to be done, and the crowd contributors will evaluate whether a particular result is accurate or not. And over here, they can easily see that Black Adam is not an appropriate answer and will mark it as horrible and irrelevant. What I'm showing you over here is the generative AI model evaluation project over here. Again, powered by the same ADAP platform that we have been using it for our deep learning customers. In the next video, I'm going to show you a demo of how a customer can use the ADAP platform again for checking the relevance of two different models. In this particular case, they see that the model A is performing better than model B. So let's say the model B is what they're developing. They're not going to ship it to production because it's going to cause a regression. Okay. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Seti to cover the insurance project.
Working? Yep. All right. Hello, everyone. I'm Sati Bahadur. I'm the Chief Technology Officer. Thank you, Sujata, for handing over to me.
Can I embarrass you too?
Yes, please.
I can embarrass you. Yeah, please.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
So Sati, another humble person. Sati joined us from Upwork, a very large freelance platform like Appen's crowd platform. Managed 1,000 engineers there.
Yes.
1,000 engineers, publicly traded company. Since he's joined, our stock's up, their stock's down. And then we have, before that, he is the... he's behind Amazon Alexa AI platform. That's where he led there as their head of engineering. And then before that, at Microsoft and Intel. So again, these are the people we didn't have before. They're the ones who are building products like that. Now you can go.
Thank you.
Sorry.
It's not like I had a choice. So, so I might as well say, yes, thank you. Just do it and I'll go from there. Okay. So Sujata talked to you about a really good example on our stack where we have the compute models and domain data. You bring it together. You kind of use the fine tuning part of our products to get it to a great state. And then you kind of have to figure out how to ship it. Like you have to get it out in front of customers, real people who are going to look at AI-generated stuff, and hopefully it meets the requirements. Right? So let's say you're a bank, right? I guess every one of you has a credit card, and hopefully, you know, some people are not giving it to the children, et cetera. But let's say you have a credit card, and you go out, and this is an example based on a banking scenario, right? So you have a credit card, you go out, you shop something, and your card gets declined. Now, in the old days, or today, currently, you would probably call up your customer service and you tell them, hey, it's not working. It's going to cost you money for that customer call. and a customer that's actually really pissed off and is worried as to what happened. So two not so good scenarios. In the language model space, you actually wanted to solve the problem for the customer immediately, great experience, and also adhere to your standards, like, is it the right customer? Are we doing the right thing by them? Does it meet your business requirements, et cetera? So in the generative AI space, how it would look like is, would say, somebody would call and say, my card is not working. Probably not use, like, direct language. Say something like, become a piece of plastic. It's useless to me. Or something along those lines. I don't know about you guys, but I'll be really upset and say, God, I don't know what happened to my card. Something like that, right? And the model is trained to understand your sentiment, is trained to understand why or what the real problem could be. The card is not really working, so it's declined. And it's going to come back with recommendations that are specific to that customer. So it's a very personalized experience. So we'll say something like, well, you're over your credit limit. You try to buy ice cream, and it just kind of put you over. And it's going to give you options that are relevant to that particular customer itself. So like, hi, do you want to like increase your credit limit temporarily? Do you want to make a payment? Or just do nothing, it's okay, you can go home. A month later, you make the payment, everything looks good. And so now the choice is to the customer on what they want to do. That person can interact and say, well, you know, money was tight. So not really saying I need a temporary raise, but something along the lines of, could say my money was tight, or give me a raise, or give me a credit limit increase, or something that is asking for more, and it doesn't have to be in the language that we are used to, right? So like conversational language. And then the model can look at it and say, yes, we could do that. I'm temporarily going to raise it by $200. And by the way, now that your new limit is X, just make sure you don't exceed that. So this is a great experience for the customer. They're done. They've interacted with the chatbot. They walked away, bought the ice cream. Life is good. And for the company too, the right decision was taken for the bank. They made sure it was relevant to that person. So the risk profile for giving the credit limit was all done for that particular thing, etc. And there was no customer service call, so save in costs. Now, let's say we didn't do that, right? So let's say this model was working and the bank wanted to ship it. And let's say we didn't do any of the things that the Appen assurance layer does. Well, and I will walk you through a new process. Let's say the card was declined and in the sense that we did not want to give them a credit limit increase. And we said something like, sorry, can't do this anymore. Now, the response that you would give back needs to be carefully measured. So I will walk you through the product known as Appen Red Teaming. And what this is a way for us to screen off answers that are not correct, ethical, biased, or in some way get you into trouble. So somebody takes a picture of it, puts it on the New York Times, that's not really a good experience. Like, look at this model, look at this experience from Expand. It's terrible. Like, I can't believe it said that. So let's say the customer said something after being denied. Are you discriminating against me because of my ethnicity? That's a loaded question, right? Hopefully, it doesn't respond like this. It doesn't give a response like this. So it says something like, statistically speaking, there's a higher chance of minorities being poor. So for that reason, your credit increase is denied. That's a pretty bad answer. You know, that's a model kind of looking at data and responding, but from a customer experience perspective, that's terrible. So when your chief security officer, CISO, or your chief revenue officer is looking at this and going, I'm not shipping this stuff. They need to know this before they ship it. And that's where red teaming comes in, right? So then internally when you're testing it out, or when you're testing with a segmented crowd that you're using to go do this, they will probably say, this response is definitely not the right response. So whenever you see something of this sort, you want to make sure that you never really say this. You would probably say a more appropriate message, and I hope there are some lawyers in the room who would probably sign off and say, that's not what you say. Here's the verbiage you would deny for a reason that we can't tell you, or something along those lines, right? All right, so our red teaming product would help, you will use the crowd and make sure that they would try different pairs of learning or prompt response pairs to make sure it's trained. Well, now the model is fixed for all the stuff that it should not be telling or responding to. How about you're ready to now ship it into production, but you want to make sure that it's doing better than what's already out there. So this was not your first version, this was a second version, etc. Is it doing fine? Is it giving you honest answers? Is it giving you honest, helpful, harmless answers? So where are you in that continuum? How do you compare with other banks? Maybe, you know, the other bank next door is more honest or gives like really nice and helpful input, and maybe your language needs to change, etc. So you want to be able to benchmark what you have, and you use the Appen platform to benchmark yourselves against others. All right. So now you've got the model out. It's good and it's good looking. You want to ship it out into production. But we all know the minute it goes out, you've restricted it from a set of people that have tried it to a super large audience. Now everybody on, you know, who's using this app is going to be hitting it. And the way that they converse with it could be very different. So you want to make sure that you have a golden data set. You're looking at the things that are happening in real time to make sure it's being monitored appropriately. Something starts drifting or moving along, you correct it immediately. Somebody gets notified. If it's giving too many answers or your business metrics are going down that are related to it, you do something about it. So this is where the Appen monitoring platform is. And then obviously it comes back to going back to the crowd again for a limited set to train it back so that it becomes better. And finally, you want to make sure that you're working with the Deloitte of the world to say, is it certified for a specific case? You want to make sure that you're signing off on the risk and you're making sure that it meets local standards or industry standards, et cetera, for that particular scenario. And this sort of ends up wraps up the entire suite that we have on the assurance side of the product that says you can evaluate both, are you doing the right thing? Are you benchmarking it? Are you certifying it? And then, of course, the monitoring aspect of it. So coming back to the same slide that I don't have my phone on me, but apparently it's talking to me. All right. Coming back to this particular slide, the Appen Cloud is going to get more and more leveraged. It's also going to get more and more specialized as we move into the generative AI space. The ADAP platform is now covering both deep learning AI and generative AI. And our suite of products, both in the fine-tuning and assurance, is going to help us move to the generative AI world, as well as our current products will help us with the deep AI learning. With that, over to Armughan.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, so we wanted to show you, not just tell you. So this is, again, say-do ratio, us making sure that we're not just saying some things on a slide, but actually showing it to you. So thank you, Sujata and Sati. I appreciate the hard work. I know how long you have prepared, and then more importantly, how long you have come and dealt with jet lag, so we really appreciate that. Okay, I want to play a video for all of you. Am I playing the video now, later? Now? Okay. So we just showed you compute, model, domain data, fine-tuning, assurance. Now what happens when let's say if you're not a Citigroup, you're not a Jefferies, or you're not a large CBA, or JP Morgan or Telstra, that you can have different people manage your compute, manage your models, manage your domain data, and then you hire Appen to do the assurance and fine tuning. A Baron Joey, which is not a huge bank yet, that, you know, you may say, hey, we want somebody to come in and manage this entire stack for us. So that's where we're going next, and we're super excited. You're the first people that we're actually sharing this to, because that's where we're moving to next. And we believe that this is this Compass platform that is coming out of our Quadrant acquisition that we did with Mike Davey out of Singapore, who's going to come up next. They're the ones in our team and product and engineering all working together with Sati and Sujata who are showcasing this. But before I bring Mike up, remember I told you IDC? As an industry analyst, they are now talking about how important this new AI enablement layer is. So I'd like to play a video and then introduce Mike.
Generative AI is taking the world by storm, revolutionizing the way we interact with technology. For enterprises to capture full value from LLMs, we see the need for a new type of service layer to enable LLMs for enterprises. We call this the LLM enablement layer. The LLM enablement layer consists of two main components, LLM fine-tuning and LLM assurance. The LLM enablement layer is emerging and draws parallels to crowd-based search and advertising relevance work used by large tech providers for many years. An important vendor for search and ad relevance is Appen, and the company recently launched a set of LLM enablement tools to support enterprise adoption of LLM, including both the LLM fine-tuning and assurance layer. IDC expects LLM enablement tools to quickly become a critical driver of enterprise LLM adoption.
Of LLM adoption, right? IDC, when we called them and said, what are you doing in this space? They said, we can't find people who are actually doing this space. We're like, let me tell you what we've been doing in this space. And then they actually validated, tested us, worked with Sujata, worked with Ryan Colin, trying to really go down. They're data scientists over there, right? Ritu is one of the top senior vice presidents at IDC. They're the ones who recommend where Salesforce is versus Salesforce competitor. They're the ones who recommend where Google Cloud is versus Azure. This is IDC, third party. This is not Appen. Again, I keep telling you, say-do ratio. I'm going to say some things and I'll prove to you, not directly, but telling you that these are the people who are validating Appen's strategy. And we've spent quite a bit of time. So just don't believe some fancy slides. Believe the people who are doing it. And we're happy to, you know, eventually IDC charges if you want to talk to them. So that's how they like to work. With that, I'd like to get Mike up so that Mike can talk to you about a great demo on how you manage all of this. So I think a lot of the mid-sized companies would be your customers right after this.
Hello, everyone. Pleasure to meet you all. I'm Mike Davey.
Oh, I didn't embarrass you.
You didn't embarrass? Well,
yeah,
I'm
sorry.
So Mike's coming from Quadrant, originally from Toronto. Cool city than Singapore where he lives in now. And sorry, I live. That's a joke. Sorry. No one's laughing. He has been doing this work for Samsung before, along with in South Korea. Spent how many years in China and South Korea?
Three in China, four in South Korea.
So our Asia business is definitely much further ahead in terms of how they're thinking about things. But Mike has spent many, many years in Asia working with some of the most advanced companies on understanding how to build some of these products. So when it comes to building product, it moves a lot fast. So we really appreciate you and your 120 people who are in Indonesia, all prompt engineers who are learning about all of this, who are doing this work in Indonesia and Singapore. Where else are they? Singapore, Indonesia?
Taiwan, Malaysia.
So,
Southern U.S. too.
Yeah, all right. So I'm sure the U.S. people are a lot slower than all your Asia folks. I'm sure they're moving really fast. But we've just been all just very thrilled to see how fast Mike's team is moving. So
thank you very much. Yeah, so I am the new guy here. We got acquired last September in 2021. If you're following since then, I was the founder of Quadrant for 7 years, and then we got acquired, and now we're part of the team here. And one great thing I can say is now that three of the top four Appen customers are now our customers, using Quadrant technology to get their products and services delivered. And so what I'm going to talk about today is sort of that whole where we look at our thesis on who's going to be deploying these type of systems, in that it's I strongly and firmly, every single enterprise is going to be touched and be using applications that are powered by LLMs. It's either going to be internally, so using it to embody and empower their workforce to be more productive, or externally to save costs and interact with actually the client. But 100% of companies are going to do this. So if you're wondering if it's going to affect your job, it's going to affect everybody's job. But AI is not going to replace humans. Humans using AI are going to replace humans not using AI. And so what I want to do today, I want to introduce you to Compass. Compass, what we're doing here is we're going to be enabling the enterprises to be able to deploy that full stack. Yes, it's great that the hyperscalers can do it themselves, and they use Appen services to power those, so they'll be using pieces of services. But there's going to be enterprises who just want everything done from the start to the beginning, from problem to end solution. And that's what Compass enables. So the first thing when you're looking at any one of these deployments is, first video, please. The first thing that we have is that data sources. You're going to be using third-party data sources, but a lot of companies are going to want to use everything in-house. They're not going to want their data going. Data leakage is going to be huge. So any platform is going to be, to be successful in this space, will have to be either to be deployed in cloud, in a VPC, or just on-prem. We're going to see a lot of that come back because no one's going to want data leakage. So any platform, Encompass, enables us to actually use multiple data sources and bring that in, and so that to power the models. Now, the next thing here is Appen data sets. When you're an enterprise or when you're a hyperscale, you may want to buy and have hundreds of thousands of prompts to train your models. But if you're a bank and you want to do a call center thing, you do not want to have you don't want to be producing all this data yourself. So you're going to be buying these prompts. And the prompts are going to be specific to the application that you want to deploy. So if you're a call center, you want to have your model trained on how do you answer call center situations. But speaking with some analysts earlier today, is that if you're an analyst, you're going to have totally different prompts and expect totally different answers. Now, if you listen to Sam Altman, he said that, you know, we have these large language models that are fantastic, but what's going to go forward is you have these smaller ones that are niches for certain applications, which have the foundation of a large language model, but then are trained to answer specific questions the way the users want to do it. So you're going to see Appen's data sets and, that are going to do this. Like, you're going to have math data sets, you have finance ones, things specific to certain industries. And we've released the reality check, which is an anti-hallucination location plugin, because these language models need up-to-the-date relevant data, or they're not going to work. You don't want to ask it a question and it, like, about restaurants, and it gives you stuff of data that's outdated from 2 years ago. If you've been using these models, you see that. So you need to have these type of plugins, and reality check is one of those. Now, if we go to the next video here, model selection, a big thing. People have asked, even prior, were asking right before demo day, we're just asking, like, what models are, you know, who's the models, which ones are people going to use? It's not one. There's going to be tons of them. And some of them will be great, and they're going to be deployed, they'll be hosted, like OpenAI's, and you can host it, use the APIs, fantastic. Other people are not going to want to use those ones. They want things like Reka, NVIDIA, they want it on-prem. We're going to live in a world where both can succeed. And you have to build any platform, you have to be able to select and use which one. So now you have the data sources, you have off-the-shelf prompts that you can put in. You pick your model. You have all these other solutions, assurance, we've already gone through those, so I won't go through those. Let me show you an application here. So pretend you're insurance. When you deploy an application here, I'm going to show a chat version of an application. Let's bring it to somebody's life. This is going to be a human using AI, okay? They get a call. Their client wants to renew their insurance policy. Now, this is how this thing could do this. So the client says, well, the salesperson, they say, hey, I want to renew our policy. You're like, who is this guy again? I haven't talked to this person in a couple of years. You totally forget. So instead of trying to run in your database, you just ask it. You're going to have a prompt that says, hey, who is this person? Ah, yeah, I remember this client. I visited them before. I have to do a site visit now. So, oh, yeah, I remember doing that site visit before, but I totally forget what their policy is. I think, once again, you can just go in the chat, ask it. If you plugged in your own proprietary data in the back, now you can make an interface where you can just ask it. So what is, you know, next thing they're going to ask here is, what is the policy? Is it current? What Compass is able to do now is it's going to pull this information from the back and say, okay, yeah, the policy is current. Tell it the expiry. But earthquakes are not covered. Oh, now I know what I can actually upsell when I call this company back. I can bring that up to see if I can upsell. But the client was asking for a discount. And hey, there was a discount. They have a discount going on right now. If you're close to a police station, we can take 10% off. I want to find out how close they are to a police station. So I go into another system. Since the data is already plugged into the back, they can just ask this directly in the application. So they find out here, it's located close to a police station. So this is a human using AI, and this is them getting all their questions answered in one space. Now, they don't want to waste their time. They don't want to go all the way out to the location to do one sales call. It costs $50. It's too much to drive out. I want to find out what other companies we have that are around there. So give me within 1 kilometer here all the other clients. The system will now go in. Now he's panicking. He has no idea who to visit. It's like, wow, there's hundreds of our clients around here. How do I visit? Who do I pick? It's like, you know what? Churn's bad for me, right? Everybody knows churn's bad. Any analyst will know churn's bad for clients. Let's find out, has anybody called a call center recently? Has anybody actually called one of the call centers? Any of our customers called a call center here? Quickly goes into the system, asks it as a human. Asks it quickly, just as a human would interact with another human to have a conversation. These large language models enable an analyst to do all this information in one spot. He sees there's 2 calls. Yamato is one of their big clients. It's like, I don't want this person to churn. Let's find out about the call. Ask it, how is the customer's tone of voice during this call? And the system goes and reads the call logs, understands the calls. The database doesn't store if the customer is happy or angry. It just stores the call information. If you're in this part, you know that you store hours and hours and hours of call logs. These large language models read that, analyze it, tell the sentiment. This client was angry and frustrated. This guy does not want to lose his top client. Just ask it now. Once again, show me the address and the information. Pulls up the latest data, pulls up the latest location, knows exactly where to go. So this is where we see the future. So if somebody's asking, like, is AI going to replace humans? No. But these AI applications, these end-to-end applications, people who are enabled with AI are going to be able to do a lot more, a lot faster, and get a lot more information. So this is the world where we see it go. So with Appen now, we're going to, that entire tech stack will continue to be able to service our clients who need pieces of those, need the assurance, need the different data sets, need the reinforced learning. But we'll be able now to take people end-to-end in the journey. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Awesome. All right. So this is great. Product is great. Remember what I said so far, just to recap. We said we've been doing relevance work for a long time, how relevance works, right? We talked to you about annotation, why annotation is super important. I told you we've been around this for 28 years. We've been doing it for 28 years. We're just not a new startup, right? We told you that. It's important for you to know that because you have to reemphasize that we have been doing this type of work with human in the loop, and that's what's required. That's what we're showing you, how Appen Crowd comes in, where ADAP comes in, our platform, where does our quadrant acquisition come in. But one of the things that we have been really lacking on at Appen, in my view, since I've joined here, because I've gone around everywhere, touched pretty much every part of Appen, and I found that we, when I said to you earlier that we were very reactive in our customer sales motion, because we would just wait for one of the hyperscalers to call us and say, here's $10 million of work, and we would say, thank you very much. We'll sit in Chatswood and we'll get the work done, right? We haven't been proactive. And I grew up in 27 years of technology industry with enterprise sales leaders who actually go in and call onto the C-suite, go and call on the chief technology, chief data officers, understand their pain points and how they make that work. And that's what we, and I told you that 4 months ago, that in under operational rigor, new products, and I said, we're going to build a world-class go-to-market. So let me introduce you to our world-class go-to-market leader. It's Andrew Ettinger. Andrew just joined us 4 days on the job. His first day on the job was in Sydney. This is such a great retreat for you, by the way. Now you got to go sell something out.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Andrew and I go back many years. He's worked at Pivotal. Pivotal was, again, you know, there are certain industries that are, what do you call it, market making or industry making, or Pivotal was a new category, right? That you have to basically go in and they'll, oh, yeah, I know what you say, non-budgeted item. So he's like, I love selling non-budgeted item. You know, guess what? Generative AI right now is a non-budgeted item on the CFO's list or the CEO's list. Pivotal was a non-budgeted item, went from zero to $500 million, then IPO'd. This is the guy who took it from zero to $500 million. We acquired Pivotal at Dell. It was one of our best assets. Every CEO wanted to have a conversation with us because we were building day two operations of Cloud Foundry. And then he went in and joined Scott Yara, who was behind Pivotal at Sutter Hill Ventures, then called you up and said, hey, I'm building another company called Astronomer. You did such a great job. You should come to Astronomer. Sutter Hill Ventures are behind Snowflake. They were the ones who bankrolled Snowflake. Snowflake is the biggest successful IPO on the planet from a data company perspective. We got this guy. So, Andrew, no pressure.
Let's I go. Guess that's the embarrassing moment.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I am 4.5 days on the job. I couldn't be more excited. There was a video released a few days ago, so I'm not going to rehash that. You can find it on LinkedIn on kind of the reasons why and how I'm so excited. Armughan talked a little bit about sort of the history there. I'd like to make just one key point around that, right? I've spent the last 12, 13 years at the intersection of cloud, data, and the infrastructure necessary for companies to build net new experiences for their customers and their employees, okay? And as you start to look at that, many use a fancy word called transformation. Right? For me, it's just hard work engaging with these very large strategic enterprise customers that have a tremendous amount of legacy systems, processes, and ways of doing things that need to enable their technology to deliver new and innovative results going forward. And that's what we do. Those are the teams that I've built. That's where I am very comfortable. I'm going to talk to you a little bit today about kind of our plans and the thematics that we have as far as how we're thinking about delivering and creating a world-class go-to-market organization and some of the key strategic drivers around that. There we go. You've seen this. It's nothing new, and I'm just sitting here, and I cannot wait actually to get home and to start to, get in the wild with all of this. But the thing for me that was really most important is this platform has been in use, as everyone spoke about, for many, many years. So there's not a lot that's new there, right, to be created in order for us to go after deep learning and the search relevance and take that long tail inside of the enterprises who really have not gotten to what all the hyperscalers have, right? There is so much opportunity out there before you even get to generative. Now, the magic happens when you actually start to combine these two things together and look at this as a unified front. Why do I know that's important? I've been here for 4.5 days, and I couldn't help myself. So Armughan and I did 2 sales calls at some of the large towers around here, the 2 financial services companies, right, C-level executives. And we really just wanted feedback, right, on how we were thinking about things and did this resonate. And it absolutely landed and really reinforced that they said, hey, look, as we're getting our data ready, it needs to be relevant, right, even for our internal apps. Forget going external, right? To Mike's point in that Compass platform, one company told us they have 11,000 hours a week of recorded calls from their call center before they could even enable their agents to be more productive on the phone, let alone what Sati showed, right, customer facing. They have to figure out how to get all of that ready, right, and relevant so that the folks can get that, right? So one great example there, and so the combination of these two things is wildly exciting. And so we've got to go and build, right, a world-class organization to go engage with the Global 5000 around that and help them deliver, right, on this. And so we look at this in 5 key ways, right? The first thing is the right people and the right talent, right? And this is obviously sales professionals, but also the solutions architects, the domain expertise, and the folks that can engage with some of the brightest minds inside of these enterprises and really be that trusted partner. So that's intense focus number one. Already working on that a couple of days into the job, but we are going to build that world-class team. The second thing is then, like, once you have that team and you have this amazing product and the amazing product vision that we're executing against, is how do you deliver the right playbook to that field to consistently, repeatably, scalably, and most importantly, predictably run these plays inside of, the market, right? And so we're going to work on those and combine that so everyone understands exactly what we're doing, who the ideal customer profile is, who these personas are, and work exactly on a very systematic approach towards engaging with them. However, once you've done that, everyone wants leverage, scale, and lift in their model, right? It's obviously what can accelerate your time to market. It can accelerate your sales in the market. And most importantly, deliver really productive yield per seller in the market, okay? You spoke about and you heard about the NVIDIA partnership and some of the other things we have. I heard something wild the other night, to Armughan's point, like if you don't stay up listening to this, right, you're going to miss some things. And Jensen, right, the CEO of NVIDIA, was on stage with Jeff Clark, right, the head of Dell, and they talked about their partnership where $1 trillion of existing on-premise infrastructure is being repurposed to now be intelligent and drive and fuel this innovation. That's not new infrastructure that has to be sold. That's already in place today. That the two of them are partnering on that. And obviously, as Armughan mentioned, we're the provider behind all of that for the relevance work and some of the generative work as we spoke about our solutions. A massive opportunity for us that we believe executed properly, which we will be massive significant lift and leverage for us in the model. Obviously, we have a brand awareness opportunity as well, right, inside of these large companies. These two folks in Australia that we met with were like, hey, like, we haven't really heard of you. And, some of my friends and others are like, wow, this is a really interesting story. Like, tell me more. And so the ability to get these meetings and engage, right, once you know these people is there. But we have a real opportunity and really thankful for the to-be-announced chief marketing officer that I will partner with. And talk more about that, but we have a massive opportunity there that's completely untapped. And lastly, when you do all this, none of this matters, right, unless you can have the proper instrumentation to understand your key KPIs around pipeline growth and net new meetings required and all of the things that, you know, folks like I, you know, love to do and do, working with Helen to make sure that this is all very predictable, very reliable, and that we understand, right, how to instrument this for growth. And more importantly, when we start to grow, we can know exactly the yield per seller that we're going to have as soon as we put them on the street, what their ramp time is, and your basic, right, sales capacity and productivity models. Really excited about all these things. And so, you know, lastly, I know we've showed this slide before, so I'm not going to repeat it, but why do I have this up here, and why does this slide excite me? Well, of course, anyone wants to sell into a market like this, and, you know, actually the market will be a lot greater, right? The key thing here is as you start to work with these customers and take a very thin slice here and work with them in that first project to get started, I call it a circular formula. Maybe there's a better term for this, but it just keeps on going and going. So you work with a customer on one project and one model, right? All that does, as you've seen through this product strategy, is drive the need to engage more and more, and now you have new use cases, new business units, right, more fine-tuning, more red teaming. And so as you start to look at the land and expand strategy in the field and getting started with customers, right, on one project, you could look at, right, the customer lifetime value as being massive and millions and millions and millions of dollars inside of these large strategic global 5,000 companies by just getting started on one of these projects. And so for us, it's a massive opportunity to have leverage and scale in our model, right, once we get engaged with these customers, as the company's proven that they've done, right, with the hyperscalers, but now our opportunity is to take that to thousands of other companies and repeat that same type of financial performance. We're really excited about the opportunity and couldn't be more confident in our approach. So with that, Rock gets to get embarrassed first. Okay.
Yeah, Rock has to get embarrassed first. But listen, before you go, you can talk to many of these folks who have mid-sized companies and you can actually sell them something, right?
Yes, we are open for business and happy to collaborate.
No, but seriously, all kidding aside, I've not talked to any other CEO, any CEO who has said, no, we're not interested. Those two customers who went to see, they want to do a proof of concepts right away, right? So this is not just anything. So all of you who have your investment funds and others, you should really be building out stacks like these. No joke, I'm very serious. This will be your competitive disadvantage probably in the next 6 months, right? So either you're ahead of it or you're chasing others, right? That's important for you to know. Next, I want to introduce somebody I'm learning from every day. He's the co-founder and CEO of our China business. That's how I introduce him all the time. Rock has built out a zero to, can't say the number, right? China? We can? Oh, how big is the number last year? What did you close at? 33.6 million. Our main competitor just announced their last quarter, and we beat them on their last quarter by far, right?
Yes.
And our main competitor, SpeechOcean, they've got a $1 billion market cap, and we just beat them on their Q1 and our Q1, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So he's gone from zero to 1,000-person organization. He used to lead IBM Global Services for how many years, IBM?
11 years.
11 years at IBM. Before that, HP, where you and I were.
7 years.
7 years at HP. And left all those places. Why? To build out a startup. Zero. To now 1,000 people. Some of the top hyperscalers along with AV companies. Yes. All the AV companies. How many of the AV companies do business with us out of how many?
57 totally and the top 10.
Okay. Right. So we've got an incredible opportunity in China. I am super bullish on China. After COVID, I asked him, like, is this way or is this way? He's like, it's way this way. So I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you so much. Okay. I'm the last one. So you have heard a lot of our peers share about technology, share about the revenue growth potential, etc. I'm very pleased to be here. To share with you the China growth. So in August of 2019, I was appointed as the general manager of China, and we started the journey. When you look at the left part, we started from 200K, then go for 4.7, then go for 24.7, then last year we achieved 33.6, and we will continue growing. I'm very pleased to report you and share with you, China, Appen China, now is the number one AI data provider in China AI market. That is what we achieved after these 4 years. And you know, China is a very competitive market, right? And we are so many competitors around us. And one, two of the public the competitors are here. One is DigitalOcean, one is DataTown. And when you look at the right part, when we compare the domestic, the performance against Appen China, we are roughly 1.5 times of DigitalOcean, and we are 2 times of DataTown. So this is the fabulous work we have done for China client. Then let's talk about the China market. You know, China is a fast-growing AI market in many years. And the second is for China Appen, we have grown our client base in a very significant way. At the end of last year, we have 203 clients already, and we continue to grow very quickly. Here, I'm very pleased to report to you, when you look at the key clients, there are three major industries who are using AI technology, and in internet, in auto, in mobile, and all the top 10, the internet companies are all our clients. We look at the autonomous vehicle, all the top 10 clients are Appen's clients. And the same to mobile, the top 5 are Appen clients. So the reason the client, they look at Appen and select Appen as a core delivery partner from AI data perspective. One is a global expertise. They know we are not only have the expertise in China, no China, because I was in China, I was born in China. The second part, more important, they know we have very strong global experience. If the China client want to go to overseas, there is a company can help them to support them. That is Appen China. The second part is Appen have the very full portfolio. We are not only a speech company. We are not only an engineer. We cover all. We provide speech, text, and image, the full portfolio for our client. That is really important. And another thing I want to share with you about our capability is our size. You can look at the Wuxi, Dalian, and Chongqing. This is the site we built in 3 years. Wuxi is in the east of China. Then they can cover all the clients in the east area. And the Dalian is in the north of China. It can cover all the north of China client. Chongqing is in the south, and they can cover the south part. So it helps our client to can come to our office by take a high-speed train within 2 hours. So we are very close engaged with the client on this. And the second I want to share with all these sites, we achieved ISO 9001, we achieved ISO 27001, and 27701. So this means we have a very high management system and a high quality system and a privacy protection system in our all sites to help our client. The last one, very important, why clients select Appen, is we have very advanced technology in China. And we are the number one peer, the players in autonomous vehicle in China. And you see the technology, which is a two-part help us. One is we really have the AI-powered algorithm embedded in our platform, which can improve the productivity and the efficiency in a significant way, right? That is number one. The second part is we really have this advanced technology, and we can on-premise deploy to our clients' environment to help them to make sure this high secure way. And we have 10 clients have been deployed already. The last one, very important. What's the future of China? We will focus on the existing client, and we will continue deepen the relationship with the existing client. They are super, and they are growing very fast. The second part is we believe not only the current top three industries be using AI, like in the internet, in the auto, in mobile, they will express they will pass to education, to manufacture, to finance, to medical, farmer, etc., healthcare. So this is the industry we're cooking, we're working as well. We believe that is the new customers will continue to grow. And the last one, very important, is generative AI. That is shifting the world. And we, in China, we also have a lot of companies that are involved in this, and Appen is a critical partner in general AI domain. So I'm very confident for China growth, and thank you very much again.
Thank you. Thank you, Rock.
Amazing. Well, you just heard it from our leadership. We wanted to make sure that we close on something that's very important on behalf of the entire organization, right? So I want to tell you again what I started with. Generative AI is going to have a new programming language. It's called Human. We've been doing human work, large language model work. That's what it's called for the last 28 years. We're not an annotation company. We're a relevance company. We're an assurance company. We're a fine-tuning company for deep learning and AI. We are going to be calling into customers directly. We're going to build our products. You've seen the kind of CTO, the CPO, our CRO, and our new CFO, and the broader teams. That's how we're executing now. That is how I've always operated a business. We feel like we need to show you so that you can trust us. I want to use the word trust again. It's been 28 years. Julie was with us yesterday, Julie Bonviller and our previous chairman and CEO, Chris Wonviller. We gave them this entire presentation because they couldn't be here today. They were just thrilled. And they said, listen, Julie said, it just feels like there was a house 28 years ago. I built it. And then for 28 years, no one went out and painted the walls. If you've ever lived in a house for 28 years, would you not paint the walls? Like, my house, I think we made our kitchen twice in 28 years, or maybe 20 years. And, you know, this refreshing that you need. And I think the board, I'm very thankful. I see Robin in the back there. Robin, thank you for joining, our chair of the audit committee, Robin Lowe. Our board has been refreshed. Our CEO, along with our leadership team, has been refreshed. You can see the energy. We feel like this is the dawn of the new era that we need to work towards. The two people who are not here, Brian Haskett, who are leading our operations, and Eric, who's here, is helping us lead the operations, along with Andrea Clayton, my partner, our chief people officer and chief purpose officer. I call it CPPPO because our culture is very important to us. And her and I partner every day. She's told her husband, Brent, and her two kids that, oh, I have a new partner named Armagon because he's going to call me at the end of the day driving home. And I always tell her, how are our people? I always tell her that we acquired hearts at Appen. We don't acquire parts at Appen. So I don't care if they're before me or after me. They're our hearts, and we have to treat them as such. So we know that we had to do a bit of a restructuring, as you know, a couple of weeks ago. And we made sure that we led with purpose. We treated everybody with respect. We made sure that they kept their laptops so that they can find their next job. We made sure that they left with dignity, the right pay, the right. We did everything as we could. We went out and looked at Stripe and Google and others and how they did that. Purpose to me, character and integrity. I don't come from a lot, by the way. I'm an underprivileged upbringing. A bunch of us in our leadership team have something in common. Grit is very important to us. Purpose is number one for us. We feel purpose, then perspective, that will lead to prosperity. I know you would like to see prosperity. You would like to see the stock going up. We got it. We feel to get there is purpose first, and then perspective, and then prosperity. And perspective is what you're seeing, right? It's moving really fast. It's making sure that we are a learn-it-all organization and not a know-it-all organization. I do not like know-it-all organizations at all. I've worked in many organizations before. As soon as they become know-it-alls, or they say, I know something more than anyone else, that does not work. And I've seen companies fail. We're not that anymore. We're a learn-it-all organization. We're accepting that comfort and growth don't coexist. You could see Andrew and his excitement. He's 4.5 days on, super uncomfortable. We're going out and doing proof of concepts with customers with a product that, you know, is moving, you know, at the speed of light at this time. And I can't tell you how thankful I am of this team and how hard they have worked to make sure that we knew that we had committed 4 months ago, Rosalie, 4 months ago when we committed to this, right, that we were going to do this. And in 4 months, I told you we were going to get something done, and we worked really hard to get it done. So I hope you're all pleased. I would love to invite now my leadership team, who just presented, up so that you can ask us questions. If you guys could all come up, please, who just presented, that would be great. So we are happy to. Ryan, you as well, please. Thank you. We just moved this in the middle. Helen, you can come up. All right, great. So I thought it would be good for you to not just, you've listened to me multiple times, I've met many of you before. I thought it would be good for all of you to, hear directly from the leadership team and ask us any questions you want. We're happy to answer them. Who's the first question? Josh, thank you. Vasim is number two after that. Thank you. Your microphone's coming so that the people on the webcast can then listen.
Great.
Thank you.
Josh Kanarakis from Barrenjoey. Thanks for taking my question. First one, you talked about some of the new products that you've brought out, most notably around the LLM enablement layer. Can we talk a little bit more around, you know, the go-to-market strategy there, where the products are at, you know, in their life cycle, when Appen will be out, what are the milestones that investors should look at to see your progress on actually getting market adoption with some of these things?
Yeah, great question. Maybe I'll start and I'll get it over to Andrew after that. I'll tell you, I think for me, if we take a look at how many pipeline, what's our pipeline number for these new deals?
45,
right? That's changing every day. 4 months ago when I announced our generative AI products, we did not have that many in our pipeline. We now have 45. When I did the equity raise, which was, I think, last week, we had 32. So that's the number I showed you. And it's changing. That's how fast it's changing. We believe that our deep learning AI revenue is now starting. We're starting to see green shoots there. I won't use the word stabilizing. I would use the word green shoots because that's where our hyperscaler, our existing business is. We have moved up multiple notches, as I said, in the executive leadership team at our customers. I would also tell you that our number one customer has now consolidating our number one competitor's revenue to us, which is great. Not just saying that, we've already quoted it, and Brian and Eric's team are already doing a great job executing on it. So I would tell you that's where we're at right now. Obviously, now, as Andrew said, we're creating a go-to-market with it, and that go-to-market, I will continue to tell you when I meet you in August, I will tell you what that 45 number would look like from a pipeline, what have we closed on that pipeline. I just need a bit more time to start flying this plane. I was given a 747 heavy, leaking fuel. I had one engine working, one engine not working, and then we had a Mount Everest coming in front of us, and, you know, we had to do debt refinancing. We had to make sure that we get cost out, get ourselves fit, turn this into an F-16, so move it around rather than pulling up in front of Mount Everest. So that's sort of where we're at. Make sense? Anything you would like to add? That's pretty much it. Okay, yeah, good. All right, for you. All right, thank you. Vasim, number two, question. And then Darren would be number three. I thought, yeah. Any other hands coming after? Okay, great. I don't know your name, but I look forward to meeting you.
Thanks, Amagan. Thanks, team. It was a wonderful presentation, and I think it's, you know, brought a lot of conviction back into Appen's name, so I think that was really great. My question is just really on, the strategy going forward. We have had, as you mentioned, a lot of loss coming through from our largest customer. At the same time, you know, we are seeing a lot of green shoots coming through. We also have probably less headcount now than we did at the start of this year. So with the limited resources that we have, where is our focus at this point in time in terms of go-to-market strategy? Thanks.
Yeah. I shared this in the Investor Day. Not Investor Day. I shared it on the equity raise, and I think I've shared it before with other – and I think I did a call on when we did the equity raise. There's a slide that I showed, which we don't have today, but it sort of tells you what our focus areas are, right? Operational rigor is going to be continued focus for us. Cash EBITDA positive. We have to get that done. Make sure that we are running. Helen and I come from a similar industry where we run a tight ship. She ran a tight ship on basis points, and it's important to us. So that's one. Number two, product. We need to get these products that you just saw. Some of those products are maturing. Some products are matured. How do we start tracking those products? So Sati, where are you? Sati and Sujata are partnered together very, very closely on getting our product roadmap to then align to that and ensure that we start delivering on those three products that I told you that we need to develop, especially around the fine-tuning and assurance, so that we get those out there. That's second. Third is our world-class go-to-market. Chief Revenue Officer, Chief Marketing Officer, who'll be announced in the next few weeks, and they're really going to focus on building the brand of trust of Appen out in the market. That'll be helpful for us, along with, you know, going out and seeing as many customers. What's your target? How many customers do you want to see per week? You notice? It just happened. A lot. So that's important to us. And then for us, you know, making sure that our business operations aspects are very critical to us, our crowd, how we segment our crowd, how do we do the crowd intake and others. And then finally, our AI for good strategy is very important, and we want to make sure that do good, be good, lead good is at the forefront. So that's what I showed on that call that I provided. I would like that to be my scorecard, Waisim, and then you should judge us all on that scorecard. And by the way, we just had a offsite here at the BCG offices and for the last 2 days, and we have a full plan exactly who's going to do what. I'm a bit of a Air Force type of person, so I would say fly in formation. Don't fly once here, once here. So we're all flying in formation. That's how we're leaving Sydney to make sure that when we get back here, we'll do that. Okay? Thank you. Darren? Anything you wanted to add to that? Okay.
Thank you. Darren Leong from Macquarie. Thanks for the presentation, guys. It's obviously a very exciting time and clearly been very busy in terms of changing the product, and it sounds like you've got to go to the market strategy, you know, over the next sort of 6 to 12 months. My question is twofold. The first one is, I suppose, when we think about that, you know, the products that enterprises adopt, you know, what do you think about the main hurdles are in terms of, you know, when we think about, say, ourselves as a Macquarie Group, an established organization, you know, I find it quite difficult internally, you know, getting products on board and I should want to use them as a supplier.
Mm.
How do you go about breaking through those barriers, especially for something that's experimental? And then my second question is even further down the track. You know, I noticed in your slides of the equity raising that you mentioned that the NVIDIA partnership or relationship doesn't have any monetization at the moment, which is fair enough. But my question on that is, you know, what are the hurdles or what do we need to see before that monetization piece?
Got it. I just want to correct. We do have two customers with NVIDIA that we are already monetizing, which is good. Andrew, do you want to take this one on how do we, what's our incursion strategies into account?
Yeah. I don't know if this is. Okay, great. Look, very simply put, this is an unbudgeted item, right, for what we're providing.
The generative AI version.
Correct. But AI in general is a C-level discussion, right, with the board of directors, right? So for us, the way to break through is, first of all, right, we have to make sure that people know who we are and what we're doing. But once we do that, it's about selling business outcomes, right? And it's about working with these executives inside of their organizations, right, to deliver those and to partner on that, right? And that enablement layer is so key, right? Because even if you just think about generative, right, OpenAI had been, you know, working on this for 6 years, and they have the entire internet that gets to provide them with their enablement, right? But if you're a large enterprise, you don't have that luxury, right? And that's where our, you know, our crowd and our segmentation and everything that we're working on is there. So simply put, it's, you know, working on those outcomes, and, you know, we've seen examples of that already.
Okay. Thank you. Next question. There's a question back there. Yeah.
Hi, Megan. And team, thanks for your presentation today. Ross Burrows from Wilson's Advisory.
Hi, Ross.
Hi. Just a couple of questions. One is, I guess Appen can't be all things to all people. Could you talk about Anthropic in some way? Because my understanding is they're thinking of, you know, constitutions or principles that doesn't involve humans in the loop or human contributions to that. So maybe can you talk about those clients that will use you, there'll be some that won't, and some color around that, please.
Great. Thank you, Ross. Maybe I can ask Ryan if you would like to start, and then Sujata. That's okay?
Yeah. Hey, Ross. So
Ryan, by the way, is our head of strategy and innovation. So, you know, they're working on what's next very quickly. So we're staying ahead of the curve, right? So please, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks, Ross. So there's a lot of techniques being deployed at the moment to build these models. We see some taking very open approaches and broad, like OpenAI, what they do with their models. They're very specific models being fine-tuned, like what Reka are doing, specific models for enterprises that require fine-tuning. And then Anthropic is taking another approach. So there's a vast array of approaches. we think it's going to be a combination of all of these, so it's the right model for the right solution. We don't think there's going to be one winner that dominates in the approach. How that plays out over time around what model for what solution, it's going to come with the evolution of the market.
Suzata, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just want to add one more thing, is that for enterprises, they will pick different models based on the use cases. For example, they might pick Microsoft Copilot or the GitHub Copilot for their coding, improving the productivity. They probably won't customize it. But they might take either Reka or Cohere or the NVIDIA model and customize it for their own scenario. So within an enterprise, we expect to see many different models based on the use cases.
Some would require human in the loop. Some may require just reinforcement learning with AI feedback. So you saw on our, I call it the chip stack. And on the chip stack, you had RLHF and RLAIF. So Anthropic is a lot more RLAIF focused, and that becomes a use case. But then there are other use cases that are there, right? They can't really come and compete with us in that space, or else they won't be as relevant. So they're betting on the RLAIF area. We're betting on the humans. I think that's a good bet when you bet on humans.
Just another quick one. In terms of the data that's being drawn on, so some of these models can only answer based on what they've been taught on,
mm-hmm.
and some of that data is not current. Some of it's 2 or 3 years old, I think, if my understanding is correct.
Yeah.
So how long does it take until the data that it's trained on becomes current, and then the responses are not real-time but as good as and add a lot of value to those asking the questions?
You're asking me to think about what a lot of the neural networks folks are, or a lot of those PhDs are thinking of. I really feel that within this year, you're going to no longer worry about, oh, this is 2021 trained data. ChatGPT-3 was 2021 data. 3.5 was later. ChatGPT-4 is later. You're now having that conversation. That question even becomes irrelevant, because imagine if for Bear and Joey, we take their current data, and we take the full stack on it, put it on NVIDIA box, train it, and then Josh is able to ask every question there. That becomes relevant today, right? That's only for a very large language model, which the ChatGPT is. It's a very large public model. You can ask it a question on what's the capital of Nigeria, and you can ask it a question of, hey, summarize Sarbanes-Oxley for me, right? The Bear and Joey LLM would be very specific. They won't answer the question on what's the capital of Nigeria. Right? It would just be asking questions that are relevant. So that could become a lot more current that way. Right? Go ahead.
Just to add to that too, is that, like, when you see there's two other ways to get the data current, right? You might train the foundational model, but then you might have embedding. So that's what Armagon's talking there. You'll be embedding it with your own data that's relevant to it. So if you want to keep everything internal, you'll train it with your own data. And you don't need to train it, like, if you're in the insurance industry, you don't need to train it on Russian literature, right? So those could be times you have the base foundational model. You'll bring in embeddings, which will probably be your own proprietary data in that, or you'll purchase third-party data sets and then train the model based on that. And then there's also going to be plugins. So we've seen with ChatGPT, they released plugins a couple of weeks ago. It's now open to everybody. Those are also going to be important, because there's going to be some things you'll always have to interact with databases and other services. That you won't be training the model every single time you need it. So the location space is one of those things that can always change, right? The locations of things. So you have all these services, plug-in services. So there's always that foundational model, but there's going to be embeddings with relevant data for the application, and then plugins with services with other data, current data sources based on what's needed for the application to do.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Raj. Suraj next, and then you. Sorry, I didn't see who came up first.
Suraj German from Citi. Three questions. Just the first one, maybe. In terms of Appen's involvement with LLM versus deep learning, just your thoughts on how much involvement is there, right? And if you're thinking maybe 3 to 5 years down the line, do you think deep learning will be 80, LLM will be 20, as the industry data says, or is it actually the other way around? Just keen to understand your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Sure. So I think you and I were briefly touching on it, so I'll touch on it in more detail. Our view is that if you look at where deep learning is today, deep learning continues to be super relevant for us. That's majority of our revenue. You saw the search results that Sujata was showing. You know, you go to any search, people are still using that search. That still is very relevant. We started doing generative AI work a few years ago.
It wasn't called generative AI, it was called large language model, or there was a project that Google Bard was working on, or Meta was working on, or anyone else for that matter. And those are all secret projects, as you can imagine, and now everybody knows about them, right? So we've been working on projects like that for a long time. We don't split out, Suraj, our generative AI revenue and our deep learning AI revenue as of yet. We really believe that that's a huge growth. As I told you last week when you were on the call, I don't know if you or Citi was on the call, I said we had 32 deals in the pipeline, generative AI, and then now we have 45, and it's just, you know, moving very, very quickly. We also believe that generative AI will have much more adoption in enterprise, and I think enterprises listen to this entire conversation. If you're not leaving from here thinking, hey, we need to do something, we need to go talk to our CIO, our chief data officer, and say, hey, what are you doing? And by the way, they're not doing much. That's the answer. We just met with your largest insurance company here, second largest bank here. Is that the same thing? Oh, wow, you guys are doing this? We're asking people all over Sydney who's doing this. We're asking these people to come in, that people to come in. So I think that's where we're at. Final, I think just on our view on deep learning AI, does that start to pivot away, and does it go to generative AI? We are seeing some projects that has applicability where generative AI is matured that it could take on, which is great, and we've seen that in our top five customers. But we've also now seen us moving up in the top five customers, and that's now giving me at least a lot more surety on. That's why I said our second half will be better than our first half, and then we'll show you more data on how our deep learning customers are doing.
Right. And just following up on that, because in terms of, it's good to hear that you're working with Google on Bard for the last 2 years. The way I understand it is previously in deep learning projects for the relevance search, when it gets into production, that's when your relevance work actually, you know, explodes, right? Because it's in production. So now that Bard's live or getting live, is that what you're seeing on the LLM side?
So I would say on fine-tuning side, so forget Bard, my answer is more in general, right? So on, you know, I think what we're seeing is our revenue definitely is there in the fine-tuning area. We've been in that fine-tuning phase, as I'm calling it, right? The RLHF, RLAIF, instructive data prompts, as well as our, you know, areas around RLAIF. But at the same time, we now feel that the relevance work now becomes the assurance work, right? And that assurance work, you know, we have seen that pick up with the customers who are maturing on the fine-tuning side, but it's all over the place, right? Who's matured on the fine-tuning, who's not, right? That's where we're at.
Third one, in terms of, good to hear the largest customer is consolidating as a better relationship now. Oh, it's, you're talking to the more relevant person. What did you have to give up in terms of that, you know, in terms of, did you have to give up, you know, margin or something on that price? And what does that mean to in terms of visibility? Because that's one of the biggest concerns when we talk to investors that, you know, we don't know what 6 months down the line or 2 months down the line. Has that changed?
Yeah. So at this time, all we're hearing from our customers, Suraj, is, and we have a gentleman, Brian Haskett, who joined us about, I want to say, 6-7 months ago from IBM Global Services, who was on the Meta account, and he's done great at it. And what we're now working on is just, it's not about just us giving up margin. It's just giving great service to customers. And the customer had asked us, this is what we're looking for, and then we had to really provide them that. So I think just our client service has improved dramatically. And I would tell you that, you know, we didn't have to go and discount. I think that's what you're asking me, to discount to win business. That's not the case. It's good work. And it's getting credibility and then earning the customer's trust. Again, I keep using the word trust. Trust is very important to us, right? Please.
So I want to add on is when you look at the AI industry, it's still a very young industry, right? It's not like software maybe 20, 30 years already, just a few years. So in this industry, even the deep learning has a lot of advantage as well. I'm a PhD from computer science. So while I graduated, I found a lot of change in this industry. So AI is very new. So we continue, we'll get a lot of demand in the deep learning domain. That is for sure, because a lot of clients have not implemented AI, the technologies into their business, transform their business, right? Another side is because this is a new industry, so there will be a lot of new technology emerging in a very quickly way. I still recall when I was in the university, we see Java, we see C, we see C++, we see Java, very quickly evolving. Similarly, you think about the AI world now, right? We see many, many new technology evolving. Appen is catching up everyone. So we're catching up the speech, we're catching up the content relevance, now we're catching up general AI. That is overall, I still think that the demand is there in the market, but just we make sure we do an excellent job to serve our client.
I would also maybe, Rock, just as you were speaking, I thought of another data point that I want to just hit that on again, which is if you look at the last 4 years of our CAGR growth, if you take our number one customer out, we've been growing 10%, right? It's just that number one customer, what they had to, you know, pivot internal reasons, right, towards a newer area of technology that wasn't as relevant to us. But now as they're coming back, we're seeing, you know, different points, right? And I don't want to forecast what it's going to be because I just need a bit more time to start flying this plane and then start to be much more predictable. My goal and Helen's goal and this entire leadership goal is to become a lot more predictable. Even when we're growing up, we want to be predictable. Yeah, and hopefully never going down, but if we're going down, we want to be predictable, right? That's helpful. I think that makes your life a bit easier. Sir.
Craig Stafford, Barrenjoey Research. Very happy to be hosting you today and thank you for the presentation. China is a massive opportunity for lots of industries, and congrats on your progress so far. Is there anything you'd call out that's interesting or different about that market opportunity to help us understand how big it is or otherwise?
Yeah, don't give the numbers on how big it is, but you're able to tell them how you're going to grow.
So first, I want to share with you when you look at the client base we have now. It's fantastic. I give you an example, when you look at the top 10, the client, right, internet client or AI client in China, when you think of the big names, the Tencent, Alibaba, ByteDance, Bilibili, Meituan, Kuaishou, et cetera, they're all our client. So what's the key reason this is the top AI internet client is select Appen? Because they are growing. They are growing in a very fast way. The reason is the global expertise. That is one. In China, they will say Appen is a unique company if they want to go outside of China to sell their products, sell their goods. They need one AI data company to be partner them, to support them. That is only one. That is Appen China. That is very, very powerful. The second part is they really think we are very advanced in technologies. We are very advanced in our resource model. Think about we have the crowd. We have the 1 million crowd across the world and can speak 170 plus, 230 plus languages. That is super powerful. And when you look at the technology we have the speech, we have generative AI, we have 2DSD. There are a lot of technology at once. That gives the client the confidence to say, okay, this is a new industry AI. Appen is a core partner be with me, and we grow together, right? So then in the case, the many, many areas, there is new, and we partner with the client to do the thing together. So for me, is I'm very confident for the future in AI with this core client. Client is fabulous. Our capability is very strong. And more important is I even think, as I mentioned, AI will eat software, right, in the long way. So that is a huge business.
Trillions of
trillion dollars ahead of us. And that wave we will catch. That's how I want to answer for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Question here. Yeah. I think it's for the webcast folks.
Chad McHale from Barrenjoey. I sit on the trading floor looking after emerging companies. So speak a lot of investors on Appen.
We can certainly help you with building your stack.
But any hard questions go straight to Josh. So, But look, I guess sitting here, you get a real context of the growth in the business, structural growth, the opportunities. I'm really keen to understand how, you know, you convert that to, you know, margin, profit. Now, obviously, that's a down the path. And but just keen to understand when you're having these discussions, are you a price maker, are you a price taker? Mm. How should we think about margin? Yeah. Because clearly, the revenue growth opportunity is significant. It's that next layer that I just want to get comfort on.
Sure. Maybe I'll have Helen start, if that's okay. There's the microphone. And then I can add on to it.
The way,
way that I
give it to the technical guy. He starts
the finance girl with no power. Okay. So the way I think about it is it's a different selling motion. Historically, this business grew up really catering to procurement organizations, which has a lot more pricing pressure on general trends. When you're thinking about the enterprise space and where we're bringing these solutions to them, that's an outcome-based selling motion, and it's a much more strategic conversation within the client. And so while we're not going to talk about what the potential is, because this is all emerging for us, we believe, and I believe history in other spaces like cloud and software and services would suggest that when you're leading with value, you have a different pricing model. So,
yeah. And Sati and Sujata and I think Andrew and I have seen this movie before, and the movie starts with something like you have an incursion strategy with the client, and that provides you the margin profile that we're at right now. And then when you go into repeating revenue, I don't use the word recurring revenue, repeating revenue, and then you start moving into monitoring services, certification services, right? That becomes, you think when someone trains an LLM and says you teach it with instructor prompts, and now the LLM is trained and it comes out here, right now it's saying all the right things, and then it starts going this way. As soon as it starts going this way, then you now say, well, no, you have to bring it back, or else it would show what the toxic content that Sati talked about, right? You're looking for X things, and it's starting to say, Sati, maybe talk, and then that becomes, by the way, higher margin. We're not going to say, as Helen said, how much higher margin, so that becomes higher. Maybe, Sati, you can talk a little bit about red teaming and what that actually means to cybersecurity and fraud, right?
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, all of you are already doing red teaming. When you see ChatGPT and there's a thing saying, was this relevant, and there's an up button and a down button, it's kind of using all of us to do the red teaming. So that way, it understands what's a relevant answer versus what's a relevant answer, what's a bad answer versus what's a good answer. Now, if you think about it from a fraud perspective or from like a risk perspective, and you're doing it for each of your applications, you want to be training it with the right things, the cloud gets involved again, or your domain experts who are part of your specialized cloud get involved again. So it's like a continuous way of making sure that your LLM in production meets all of your risk requirements.
That requires, and now if you're not ChatGPT and you're a bank and you deployed it, who's giving you the up and down? You're not going to deploy it with your customers giving you, oh, yeah, you gave me a really negative answer on my credit card and made me poor or called me poor, right? Oh, that's down. Well, that's not just a thumbs down. That's like cancel credit card, cancel bank, never talk to this bank again moment, right? So that becomes a much higher margin order for us. I'm trying to give you a directional answer if you don't mind, right? Yeah, pleasure, yeah.
And one more thing I want to add is that for sensitive data, some enterprises will require a secure crowd, which will be in secure locations, still again will be a much higher margin. And maybe the last thing.
Yeah, come on.
Maybe the last thing I would add is that when you have repeating business within a client, just the lifetime value, I mean, it really changes the discussion that we can have when we're going out to market to acquire clients. This idea of proof of concepts and leading with the outcomes, that the whole idea is we need to acquire the clients. You acquire the clients, you have the average in our portfolio today is 9+ years for those top five. And that's really what we're looking to do in the enterprise space, because repeating business for 9 years is very meaningful, obviously.
Good. There's a question there.
It's Conor O'Prey from Canaccord.
Hi, Conor.
Hi. The question maybe for Helen, is it inevitable that Appen is always going to be a company that's got 70-75% of its revenue in two customers? Or if we fast forward 3 years, is this a much more diverse kind of revenue-based business and therefore much less risk attached to that? Because as you pointed out, and the metric you provided is very helpful working out exactly what's happening with that key customer, but it still represents a big, big chunk of your revenue, despite the fact that it's off substantially.
We used to have this much gap, now we have this much
gap. Yeah. So is it inevitable it's always going to be a highly concentrated revenue base, do you think?
Well, we certainly don't want to lose any market share within those existing top clients, and we think that generative AI is incredibly important to them as well. And so the services that we're providing to them today we want to keep those, we want to nurture those, and we want to grow in other new areas in the generative AI space. So for me, the measure is really about new account acquisition in the enterprise space and whether we can actually shift the numbers over the next few years. It's not going to be wholesale, not with because we want to keep that market share. So for us, though, where you'll see it is in the customer acquisition counts that we'll provide.
Yeah, and I would just add on to it, Hunter, that I think on the deep learning side, we want to protect that base, continue to improve what our profitability looks like there, improve profitability. I think we have a great opportunity. I'm going to go back to my house analogy, 28 years, not been painted, cobwebs. Oh, this thing is leaking. Just fix one leak, margin goes up. Another leak, this goes up, right? That's what Eric, who's sitting in front of you, and Brian and others who are working really hard on making sure that our experience is there. And then how much we, pay out there with the crowd. We want to make sure that it's a good balance of the kind of work that's happening there, the kind of work that we're delivering. When I started, we were doing negative margin deals in many of these accounts. We don't need to do negative margin deals. I was never taught in any business school that negative margin deals are good unless that turns into a really great opportunity. So we're fixing a lot of those pieces, and we feel very confident that we'll get the result. Thank you, Connor. Yeah, Suraj.
Maybe just following Connor's comment, just in terms of the other hyperscalers that you mentioned as an opportunity, any update on that in terms of?
So I would say out of the top two, are here for us. The other three, and when I say top two, sorry, I'm sitting next to China, so I should talk about the North American top two hyperscalers versus the other three. We feel there's an incredible opportunity there. Like what our market share is on the top two, we need our market share to be that in three. And he hasn't gotten his quota yet. So we're really working towards that. And the good news is we're seeing some green shoots there. Our current sales team, led by Kevin Bondekamp, has really been focused there. We've had some really good green shoots over the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Just people are seeing Appen in a different way. Just look at, you're investors. I remember meeting, some of the investors the first time. It's not a pleasant conversation with many of you, right? Think about you as a customer. And how that conversation was when you first met Armughan and the team, and then now 4 months later, the customers are looking. It's the same service that we're providing to you. Would you all say that our service is improving a bit? No? Yes? Yes. Okay, good. That's very hard customer for me, by the way, to ever get that. And I'm telling you that our service is improving. And we are, and I promised you and Tony that we were going to, you're like, yep, more say do, less marketing gimmicks. This is not marketing gimmicks, right? This is real. We're improving our service SLA to you. We're going to continue to improve our service SLA to our customers. That's how we're operating. So if this is any type of relevance to you of how we're working with you, that's the same style, if not more. One of our, it's not on here anymore, our values in our to achieve prosperity is being customer obsessed. And customer obsession means that we're always thinking about our customer and their customer and working backwards from there. For us, our shareholders and our investors, we treat them like customers, and we want to treat you like that. And you'll see that from me and my leadership team.
Maybe last one from me. In terms of enterprise, a few years back, this is pre-COVID, a different era maybe, there was a big investment in the sales team, headcount as well. Now there's a reinvestment again. So what's different this time? Is it just because LLM is much more fit in terms of Appen? And secondly, you sort of mentioned segmented crowd workers, right? How difficult is that to actually, or do you actually have the 1 million workers? Do you actually have enough segments in there?
Sure.
Or do you actually develop that?
Maybe Ryan can take that one, but I'll take the first one. What was the first one? Go-to-market, yeah. So go-to-market will be built, right? So before my time, when we built our go-to-market for enterprise, our go-to-market for enterprise was more built for, can we sell you data collection? Can we sell you data annotation? Can we sell you relevance? And then the maturity of the customer base at that time, as I said, Suraj, we were going, if I'm walking into, let's say, JP Morgan or Citi, let's use Citi, you probably don't want me to use JP Morgan's example, Citi's example, and then, we were going and talking to your chief data officer, we were not talking to your chief data officer, we were going and talking to your data scientist who was like 10 levels removed from the CEO, and that person had a $100,000 budget, and we were going out and figuring out, can we do that work there? The person will tell us, here's $100K, get lost, right? And we'd do great work. They're like, great, I have no more budget, right? And then we would go to where automotive was. And automotive became a good successful area, like China, along with Germany and Europe. That anyone who had a budgeted item in the deep learning area, like government, federal, autonomous vehicles, that became an area that we started doing well in. But again, they weren't as mature as hyperscalers that they could buy in millions of dollars. So I would say there's part of it that was related to timing. Part of it is related to what we built back then. It was not the Salesforce that you're going to see this guy build, right? This guy meaning Andrew, sorry. And that's a very different sales team, right? It's a sales team that goes in and talks to the manager level person, not the sales team that's going to go and have a conversation on his plane. We got Wi-Fi, texted a few CDOs, chief digital officers, landed here in jet lag mode, went and saw chief data officer of the biggest bank here, right? That's very different. That's the sales motion I have always led in the last 27 years. Yeah, Ryan?
Yeah, I think to add to that, Amian, Taraj, when we were trying enterprise for the first time, there were huge hurdles enterprises need to get over around the data organization and actually putting in those pipelines to make use of them. Now with generative AI, it can use unstructured data really easily. So that barrier doesn't exist anymore. The barrier shifted to the other side around how they fine-tune the models once they've been built and make sure that they work for the context in the way that the companies want them to. So we see that the frictions around AI in enterprises have been reduced significantly. And we think that's going to be the big unlock. And going back to Connor, your question around the shift of revenue, we think that's going to be the big unlock for enterprise too, around getting that balance right. On the segmented crowd piece, there are people in our crowd that match the needs of what our customers are looking for when we say segmented crowd, but sometimes they want some really specific things that we need to go out and source. The good thing is we've got the muscle to go and find people, to onboard them, to do the QA, and to pay them, and to keep them engaged. So the muscle that we've got from a more agnostic crowd can be easily applied to a segmented crowd.
Thank you, Ryan. Question there?
Just wanted to ask another question around go-to-market.
Hey, can I just introduce yourself?
Sorry, Stephen Kent from Perpetual Private.
Hi, Stephen.
Yeah, just want to ask another question around go-to-market, particularly on the enterprise side. How important is Compass or the Compass platform in that strategy? Is that where you're putting all your eggs, or how does Compass sort of blend into that go-to-market on enterprise?
Sure. Maybe I'll start, and I'll have Andrew and Mike talk about that a bit more. I would tell you, when we look at Compass, as I explained to you when I introduced it, said that becomes much more of a, you have Fortune 500 clients, Fortune 50 clients, right? And then you're probably not Fortune 500 yet, Baron Joey, right? So you would think the Baron Joeys of the world who are spending millions of dollars on their technology stack at this time, how can they not spend millions of dollars and actually spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? Or it could be 1 million versus spending 10 million. We think that the order bit is like that. We think that the Compass platform works more for less matured in their data stack customers of ours. They would like to see that because we just know that, if we just go into a customer and say, hey, have you figured out which compute you're using? Have you figured out which model you're using? And have you figured out how you're going to ingest your data? They'll be like, I have no idea, as you said, right? You don't know. You're business unit folks, right? Your ECM teams and other teams, your trading team and other teams, research teams. You rely on your CIO or your chief scientist to figure out what your business problem is, right? That happens everywhere. So our view is that when you're in a matured bank like Citi or, let's say, Telstra, or you're at CBA or you're at – they have different functions there. But even yesterday when we met the number two bank here and they were saying where the maturity curve is outside of machine learning, it was not there. So we feel that there is – relevancy where our deep learning and our generative AI platforms, the way Sati and Sujata presented, that's more relevant to us. And what we're seeing our customers say, hey, we're matured. We want to do fine tuning first. Then we'll get to, assurance with you. And then there are customers who are like, hey, they're like Josh's, Baron Joy's, fastest moving, just gave birth to their company 2019. They're like, we want to be ahead of others. How can we move faster? They are more calling us for a Compass-like solution is what we're thinking. Anything you want to add?
I think I would just say, simply put, and again, I'm relatively new, is that it's a component of the overall enablement layer. right? And it definitely will be useful, but I don't think it's all eggs in that basket at all. It's just a component, right? And as Armughan said, right, depending on the maturity curve of where we're at and the projects that we're at, the relevance of it will go up and down, but there's plenty to go around outside of that.
Mike? Yeah, and on my side here, that, like I was saying, that humans will replace humans using AI will replace humans not using AI. And platforms like Compass are going to be coming up. You're going to see tons of them, applications being delivered. And if your company's not thinking of this and people aren't thinking about this, it's going to be in a short time, not like 3-4 years from now, this is going to hit. People are going to understand that these type of applications can be deployed in months, and people will all of a sudden see the competitive edge erode quickly away. So I would really like look into this space and see how fast things are going to move. And what's going to happen is that people are going to learn quite quickly, and Appen's going to be able to walk people through and get them there. And the people who aren't taking the steps to walk through are going to be disadvantaged. And so you're going to see this happen quite quickly.
Some of the investors that are here, I've met you all. I've asked you how big your fund is, how many people work in your environment. You have, you know, you'd be perfect candidates for a Compass, by the way, right? That's what you would be. But it's, again, where are you on thinking about that? How do you use data? Are you still thinking of data in a legacy way? Or are you thinking of, hey, maybe I can innovate? Like Mike and Ryan, innovate, they're my 10% club. So I'm 70, 20, 10, 70% core, 20% adjacent, 10% disruptive. Always thinking, hey, what's next? Let's push the limits while this is the team that's focusing on the 70, 20, and how are we balancing that? You know, that's a very important aspect that every CEO should have in this fast-moving AI world. Any other questions? Oh, there it is, yeah.
Hi, Andrew Gillies from Macquarie. Just a quick one. I'd just like to understand the differences in the sort of nature of like a no-code app or a platform like Sofdr, which enables, you know, an enterprise business to build a tool or a web-based application, as opposed to something like a Compass, which, you know, might provide a little bit more functionality, but again, might take longer to deploy. Can you maybe just compare and contrast the two?
Who wants to take that? Mike, do you want to start, then Ryan?
Yeah, so when you look at things like Compass and that, there's a lot of different applications that can be done. And as Armughan went through, there's an entire stack that gets you there. And that chat bot part on the top of that has to be very different for different people. So an analyst might want to be working at a desktop and have access to a big screen. While it might be, if it's going to be a front-facing, it might be a little chatbot on the bottom of your screen on a website or in an app. Or if like you're one of these apps, what are they called, super apps, they're going to be changing their entire interfaces coming up. So if you look at I'm based in Asia, in Singapore, and there's a lot of super apps around here, and they're going to be deploying this type of technology. And so the front end is going to be very different. So it's not going to be like a one, like when you look at it, you're going to be putting all those components together, but the application might be very different depending on, is it like an internal thing for employees? Is it a customer facing thing? Hey, it could be a new watch. Could be like that you have a new watch you talk to, and it's going to have all these, we're talking about data and plugins, you have all these things that are going to be plugging into it. And it could even be your mirror talking to you when you ask for news in the morning. It could be powered by the same type of technology. So it's not going to be a one type of front interface on these deployments.
Good. I think that's a wrap. No questions from you guys. I was expecting at least like one question. All right, good. Well, thank you for your time. Before I end, I just want to say again, Baron Joey, thank you so much for hosting us here. We really appreciate it. Thank you. I also want to thank our team, Rosalie Duff, Jennifer Cressman, Bea. This doesn't happen like this. A lot of us show up, and this just all got set up. I've been doing enough AV and tech events in the world to know that it doesn't work this way. So thank you all in the back that you were able to get that done. These guys showed up, by the way, 2 hours before all of you showed up, and they turned this entire thing into this. And we had animation and we had videos and things. So can-do attitude is just amazing. We love that. So thank you, everybody. Appreciate it. Thank you for your time. Thank you, everyone on the phone.